Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Friday Football Festival continues here on WKOK. Don't forget Shamokin and Shikellamy tonight with Kevin and the coach Dick Hort. Looking forward to that with a 7 o'clock kickoff tonight. Big game for Shikellamy, and Shamokin's trying to break through. Today's show, the Friday Football Festival, brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Come on, get going. It's the weekend. Beverages, snacks, the pickle bar, hot, fresh, roasted peanuts. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And joining us on the Friday Football Festival is Lauren Crispell, our sideline reporter for the Penn State Sports Network. LC, it is great to have you with us, buddy.
Good to be with you guys. How you doing, Steve?
Doing well, LC. Look forward to this weekend. And I've checked the weather forecast. It looks good. You and Marty Bannister, who's the Ohio State sideline guy, may have to build a little fire on the sideline, but that's fine. It would make it easier for us to spot you.
Yeah, that's okay. You know, we've done the rain. We've done the wind at this point. A little cold is nothing. So the dropping temperatures, no big deal. We'll be just fine.
Yeah, exactly right. For you, what's the experience been like on the sideline to this point?
You know, it's been tremendous, Steve, all of last year. I'm not sure I ever really could have prepared for what 2 weeks ago was like. I know I saw you right after the game, Steve. We both kind of looked at each other, and I said to you, I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like that, both on the field, in the locker room after the game. To see it from that perspective, to at least get a chance to try to understand what those guys were enjoying, because let's face it, I'm not a Division I athlete. I can't sit here and say I can totally identify with that level of joy in sports because I've never experienced it. But you could see it on the field, you could hear it, you could sense it, and you knew that something special was going on. And as great as the experience has been through the first 15, 16 games, it really built up to 2 weeks ago, which I'm not sure will ever be topped. So to be able to work with you and Jack and then to be able to see this team develop over the last year and a half has been a real blessing. It's been so enjoyable.
It's the next part, though, because the issue of the clock was brought up, because when I set the play up, I said 27 seconds, they're on the half-yard line, ran the play, and Jack's going through what you know how they took care of it on the line of scrimmage, and I look at the clock, and there's still 27 seconds. You're the one that bailed us out and said, hey, they told us down here 29 seconds. Explain how that came about. It's a small thing, but this is why you have a sideline reporter, because they can find things out and straighten out anything so that we're on the right track.
Well, you know, I've got some good sources down there, and as you know, I even got a source from Michigan 2 weeks ago, which was completely unexpected, but you know, I was able to step away for a moment and kind of pulled Kirk Deal aside, and Kirk, as you know, has his eyes on everything, and Kirk was able to tell me that they did the time back on the clock, so you know, the people down the sidelines have been tremendously helpful, whether it's Kirk or Spider or even Tony Mancuso. You know, Tony Mancuso, he seems to be in 10 places at once down there on the field on behalf of Penn State Athletics, and he's provided some great insight as well. So, you know, I think over time I've been able to sort of develop some relationships with some folks down there that can help our broadcast. It can really open up some doors to some information that can be valuable for our listeners, and then that was a good example of it.
That was a perfect example of it, because then we had it straight on the air because of you, instead of us going through and saying, okay, what happened here, being confused about it. You took care of the confusion within seconds, so I didn't drone on like an idiot about the fact that what happened in 2 seconds.
Well, you know, it's a unique spot. It's an extra set of eyes, and I think you've said this before, Steve. It's a perspective that you can't have unless you have somebody down there.
And well, you and I have talked about this.
I'm sorry, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this. I mean, we've had long, long talks about this. And part of what I've said repeatedly is that you're in a spot we're not. Take advantage of it.
Well, it's a unique spot, and to be honest, after going to games for years, you know what a Penn State fan I've been growing up, you see and hear and notice things that I never would have thought I would have noticed as a fan, and the opportunity to watch interactions between teammates, maybe between players and their position coaches, those kind of opportunities shed light into the game and insights into the game that I've never seen or experienced or even processed before. So it's a really, really fun spot to be. I'm really looking forward to Saturday night, because I've been to Columbus certainly never from this perspective, and I'm looking forward to seeing what these guys will deal with from an environment standpoint, from a noise perspective. It's going to be a neat night on Saturday.
Whenever I've been on the sideline in years gone by, I didn't like it because of the vantage point. I constantly have found myself when I've been down there checking the scoreboard to see what yard line it is, what down and distance is. What's that been like for you, seeing the game from that perspective instead of up top?
It's been a real learning experience, Steve, and here's why. You know, a year ago, I would fix myself to maybe the most comfortable spot on the field where I could see enough of the field and also be ready to answer you guys if you came down with a question. Now what I'm trying to do is anticipate a little bit better, and so if Penn State gains a first down, I'll position myself maybe 12 yards ahead of the sticks. So if there's a close play where there might be a measurement, I can get right in line with that linesman and try to give you guys an early edge on whether or not I think we might be short or we might have it. So it's been a real learning experience. You're right. There are certain limitations there because I can't see the far side of the field all that well. Sometimes I'll miss substitutions for the visitors who are coming in from the far side of the field. But on the near side, I can see just about anything I want as long as I've positioned myself in the right place. And I'm trying to get out in front of the football so I can give you guys a look at something right after a play has happened, if it's leading into what happened, what might happen the next play. So, again, for example, if I can get you a spot on whether a guy got his hands under the football on a catch, whether they got a foot in bounds, who might have a fumble first, the spot of a football, that's what I want to try to bring to you guys and be ahead of the chains.
Yeah, and you've done all that and much more.
Elsie, have you ever had a chance, because you're down there, you're working so hard throughout the course of the game, and you're listening to what Steve and Jack say and doing your part for the broadcast as well, just to realize last season what a special season it was, and the Michigan game, what a unique game that was, and a fun time for so many people, just to step back and really say, wow, you know, this is really neat to be down here on the field and take it all in because you have that interesting perspective?
Without question, Brian. And that's a great point, a really good question. And again, back to my years going to games as a child and as a college student, it was fun, it was enjoyable, but it's not like this. This is a very different experience, and I'm really reminded of it the most when I talk to fans because they have questions. They want to know what I see and hear and what the mood of the players is, what the locker room scene is like after the game. And that reminds me that I'm in a really special place and I have a really unique opportunity. And there are times, guys, where I'm so absorbed in listening to what Steve and Jack are saying or what the flow of the broadcast is that I forget what the atmosphere is around me. And I have to take my headset off. I did it at the UCF game, and I did it again 2 weeks ago just to get a sense of how loud it really was. And I'll be honest, a couple times I've pulled those headsets away and been blown away. And it's nice to be down there, kind of at the nerve center of what's going on. And you're right, Brian, those are the moments where I can step back and say, this is a really special opportunity. I'm loving every minute of it.
Yeah. So how about some basketball promotions coming up?
We are excited, guys. I know you are too, Steve. You're excited about the prospects of this team. Yes. We've talked about it. I think this is Coach's deepest team in years since he's been here, and we're excited about what's going to happen on the court, and we're excited about what's going to happen in the stands for our fans as well. You know, we open up with Wagner here in a couple weeks. Very excited to get that going on a football Saturday. And for our fans who might be wondering why they don't see a tip-off time, yeah, we're going to wait to see when the Minnesota football game is announced in terms of their kick time. And then we'll subsequently announce the basketball tip time as well. But we're excited about some of these early season promotions. Got some great student giveaways planned, snapback hats again. I'm sure you guys, maybe not Brian, but Steve, I'll bet you can identify with me on this. Do you remember the old caricature T-shirts of NBA players?
Yes, I remember those.
Yes,
we're going back, and we're gonna bring a friend in who can draw up some caricatures of Tim Frazier and DJ Newbill for our throwback night. And I kind of go with a retro T-shirt for Tim and DJ on two separate nights, and do their caricature T-shirts. So we're excited about those. That'll take you back to the '80s and '90s, I think, at least for a night. Again, we've got some great giveaways planned this year. We've got some great halftime acts as well. We've got Coaches versus Cancer Day, Steve. That's scheduled for February 9th against Illinois. Right. We've got Thon Hoops Day on February 2nd against Purdue. That's an early game because of Super Bowl Sunday. So there's quite a bit on the slate. And one of the things I'm most excited about, guys, we've been trying to do this for years. So early in the preseason, we were doing all our photo shoots, our video shoots. We have for years wanted to do a panoramic poster of a dunk. And I know that sounds relatively simple, but when you look at this poster we've created, every step of the dunk will feature a different player, and it's all going to progress to one dunk. So it's going to be a nice autograph piece for our fans. It'll be the giveaway for our autograph session day on the 2nd against Purdue a couple months from now. But I think it's going to be a really unique poster that fans will enjoy. Every player is featured, and it was fun to put together. So all of that's going to be on GoPSUSports.com, Steve, and we're ready to get this going because it's going to be a fun team to follow.
It will be a fun team to follow. No question about that. LC, thanks so much. See you on the plane here in a few minutes as we make the trip to Ohio State. Laura Crispell with us. Great to have him on board. And LC, of course, does a great job on the sidelines for us every single week. Gives us some great information. I'll give you a good example. We were talking about the Michigan game. In the Michigan game, they added the 2 seconds. And when they did that, he was the guy that straightened everything out for us, which was great. Oh, LC, our guest on the show today. Now we're going to shift gears, and we're going to bring in Corey Geiger from the Altoona Mirror. We'd hope to have Corey on a little bit earlier. Corey, great to have you with us again, buddy.
With the kids, and I didn't want to have a screaming baby on the phone with you.
Well,
as I'm sure you did.
We're all been there. Well, if things go sour talking to you, I can talk to them. No, I'm just kidding. let's talk. I want to talk briefly about the World Series before we move forward. Everyone has now seen the call in the first inning. We know what baseball tradition is, and then we saw how they handled it last night. Your thoughts as how you watched it unfold?
Well, I'm with you, Steve. You just got to get the call right. Now, traditionally in baseball, umpires really aren't going to overturn something when they meet. Baseball umpires are very stubborn people. They don't like to admit when they're wrong. When you've talked to baseball managers before, when managers go out to argue, sometimes they're just looking for the umpire to admit that they blew it. Not necessarily to overturn the call, because you just don't see that very much. But sometimes the manager just wants the umpire to say, you know what, Skip, I just didn't see it. I made the best call that I could. Well, that was one of the worst calls I've ever seen in baseball. And I think your explanation is pretty good. Dana DeMuth is watching the foot on the bag. But my goodness gracious, I mean, if you assume, you know what happens to both you and me. And if he's assuming that Cosmo's going to catch the ball, then he's not a major league umpire, right, in my opinion. So I just thought it was a horrendous call. But they got it right. They got it right. And in sports, I just think you want to get the call right.
Well, as he said, and Fox did a great job of then listening to the tape and then playing it back. And in John Hirschbeck's conversation with Mike Matheny, he said, look, we're unanimous, 5-0. He said, yep. That he missed the ball. I said, and he says, and regardless of what you think, our job is to get it right. And we got it right. And he was right. I don't think couldn't have handled it any better.
I'm looking forward to replay, to be honest with you. I mean, whatever system they come up with, you just want the calls to get right. You want it to be quick. You want it, to not bog down the game. And I was rooting for the Cardinals. I know you were rooting for the Red Sox. But, mm-hmm. At the end of the day, had the Cardinals gotten out of that inning thanks to that call in a scoreless game, oh, my gosh, you're talking Don Dinkinger with the Cardinals in 85.
Right.
You're talking... that's up there among some of the worst calls in baseball history.
Yeah, and Dinkinger's call on the George Order play is something that, just stunning, unbelievable. Now, you have the technology; you can use it to correct it. Now, let's make the turn to Penn State and Ohio State. That will take place Saturday night in Columbus. You've watched Ohio State. They're in a precarious spot, in my opinion, Corey, being in that 4 spot where they can't control their own destiny. They don't have a Clemson matchup in Death Valley on their schedule to vault teams. What are your thoughts on this last year of the BCS and the spot they find themselves in?
Well, Penn State beating Michigan hurt Ohio State.
Right.
We have to be honest about that. But frankly, I don't think Ohio State close to being as good as Alabama, Florida State, or Oregon. Now, we're not going to find out because they're not going to get to play those teams. But, you know, even if Ohio State runs the table, Steve, unless they're beating people by 30 and 40 points and they just they do what Florida State did to Clemson and just really change people's minds with the eye test, they're not going to jump those other three teams. And
no.
Even if two of those three teams lose, you will have a lot of people in this country claiming that a one-loss team should be there above Ohio State, depending on who that one-loss team is. If Alabama loses to an LSU or something, you know, you're not going to convince me that Ohio State would still be better than Alabama. So that's where I think it'll get really interesting. But I don't see two of those three losing. As long as, you know, Alabama, as long as a couple of them can remain undefeated, then Ohio State's going to be on the outside looking in. But frankly, I mean, when you're struggling against Iowa and you're struggling, frankly, against Buffalo, which they did, don't try to convince me that you're the best team in the country.
Exactly. And they can potentially get help to move because Oregon still has UCLA this week and then Stanford. So the door
and Oregon State.
So the door is open that Oregon could pick up a loss somewhere, but even a one-loss Oregon might still be in front of them.
Florida State's
at Miami. Yeah, at Miami, and they still have Florida at the very end. And then Alabama still has an LSU, an Auburn, and an SEC championship game. But all three of those have more cachet on it than what Ohio State has. I think that's safe to say.
And I got to be honest. I would hate to see Ohio State play in a championship game because I think they'd get throttled to the degree that Notre Dame got throttled last year. I just don't think they are. I mean, that defense is not good, Steve. I know you've looked at a lot of film.
Yeah.
Their defense has really struggled. Now, that's not to say that Penn State's just going to walk into the horseshoe and put up a ton of yards and
right.
ton of points because it's an 8 o'clock game. It's Ohio State talent. It's going to be a tough game. But I don't think anybody would be surprised if Penn State goes in there and puts up 27 or more points. Would you?
No, and that would not surprise me. And the other part, too, is Corey and I are having a conversation here in the context of where they are among the top 10 ranked teams in the country. I think that's the context with which we're having
sure.
this discussion. So that's why when we're talking about when Corey says they don't have a defense that's comparable to X, Corey's talking about, you know, among teams that are fighting to win the national championship. And I agree with you, they don't.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned it. I'm not saying Ohio State's not a good team.
Exactly.
Ohio State's one of the top 5, 7, 8 teams in the country. I just don't think they're one of the top, really, 3 or 4.
Right, because you and I are talking in the context of, hey, look, who ends up in the national championship game? That's two teams. What other teams do they have to get by? We're talking about a really good Ohio State team, but probably one, Corey, my opinion, again, not a great Ohio State team. Really good, but not great.
They will go as far as Braxton Miller can take
mm-hmm.
them. He's throwing the ball a lot better this year. That would be a major concern
yep.
for Penn State, and it will be a major concern for Bill O'Brien and John Butler because I think you have to try to make him as one-dimensional as possible. Either make him beat you with his legs or make him beat you with his arm, but you can't let him do both because if he's doing both well, and Devin Gardner did both pretty well.
Yeah.
But Braxton Miller's a better player than Devin Gardner, and he's got better talent around him, and he's got better coaching, frankly, than I think that Brady Hoke offers Devin Gardner. So I think you're looking at a better caliber player, but if they can keep him contained in the pocket and force him to beat him with his arm, or vice versa, force him to beat him with his legs and really shut down things on the perimeter, then I think that's Penn State's best chance to win.
My opinion, I think it's the ground game you have to take away. I think you have to make him throw the football, even though he's throwing the ball much better, because if you can take away the ground game, Corey, I think that also then means you've taken away Carlos Hyde. And if Carlos Hyde is in the mix running downhill, I think that becomes a big issue.
I think you're absolutely. Carlos Hyde, he's a man back there.
He's a hammer.
He's going to be a difficult challenge. But I got to say this, you know, and I know Penn State fans don't necessarily want to hear this. I'm still not sold on the pass coverage. You know, I know Bill O'Brien called Jordan Lucas one of the better players on the team, and I know Trevor Williams has a lot of talent. I think Adrian Amos has been a pretty big disappointment this year, Steve. But, again, I'll use the word context that you use. I think there's talent in the Penn State secondary, but they're not facing a lot of teams that throw the ball. Just because I don't think the secondary looked all that good against Michigan and Devin Gardner. I think Braxton Miller's better. So either way, I think you're right. You want to take away the ground game first, but I still think he can beat them through the air with his arm.
And that's the big part. Last year, if you were to pick out a weakness for the Ohio State team, it was their passing game. It took them a little while to find a groove with it. I think now it's become a strength on their football team. And one of the more underrated parts of a throwing game, mm-hmm. passing game, is accuracy. And what's impressed me is that he's far more accurate. And when it comes to Gardner, Gardner's a converted wide receiver. At least Miller's a natural high school quarterback.
You know this, Steve. I think they've got to get to him.
Yes, you do.
You know, the message that Bill O'Brien sent to Deion Barnes by starting him off on the bench, maybe that will get through, because Deion Barnes is an excellent pass rusher. Mm-hmm. Now he's not very strong against the run, but he's just a sophomore. He can get there. But either him or Alanian on the other side, or Zettel or Daquan Jones up the middle, they've got to get to Braxton Miller, because if he's got a lot of time to throw back there, you know, that's really putting the secondary in a hole.
Alanian has really come on. It's really interesting to watch the maturity in his game and how John Butler's using him. As the fans see, as they watch him out there, they're floating him, and he's done a great job as a floater.
Yeah, sure. I agree. He had a terrific game against Michigan.
Yes, he did.
Great to see him really come through with a career performance like that. But again, I think you're going to have to get a stronger performance from Deion Barnes. I don't know what exactly is going on with Deion this year, Steve. Maybe you've seen something on film. Maybe they're just keying on him more. But he's been a non-factor, essentially. And I thought Deion Barnes was a superstar in the making.
Yeah, agreed. Corey, thanks so much. Friday Football Festival rolls on here on WKOK. Talk Penn State, Ohio State. Next hour, the Steelers. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Friday Football Festival continues next half hour with Neil Coulon from behind the steel curtain here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
It's almost Halloween, but Sunbury Motors won't pull any tricks. They'll just give you a big treat. Sunbury Motors has over 400 new Fords clearly marked with the lowest prices of the year. Hunting season is upon us, and get ready with a new Ford truck. Pick from over 100 new Ford F-150 trucks with 4x4 super cabs starting at $27,989 and regular cabs from just $19,979. Sunbury Motors has 53 of the hot-selling Ford Escapes, and they're slashed to as low as $20,980. Is the area's only electrification dealer. Save up to $10,000 on C-Max and Fusion energy vehicles that get up to an equivalent of 100 mpgs. Payments on these vehicles start under $300 a month with no money down. There's also 0% financing available on most new Fords. Don't be spooked by other dealers. Come into Sunbury Motors during this huge fall sales event. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly serving Central PA since 1915.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. SJS on the Friday Football Festival as we get you ready for another big weekend. Don't forget tonight, Shamokin and Shikellamy. Tonight, 7 o'clock, Kevin Herr and the coach, Dick Hort, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. A big game for Shikellamy. Shamokin trying to break through for Yaakov Yisrael. So that's coming up tonight, and the kick is at 7. Kevin and the coach on hand for that. And, of course, we get you ready for that. Kevin broke down the entire playoff scenario for us yesterday on the show in the 4 o'clock hour. And tonight they have the big game between Schick and Shamokin. Looking forward to that very much here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And our Friday Football Festival continues. We've already had Mike McGregor on from Fantasy Throwdown to talk about fantasy football. Last half hour, we had on Corey Geiger from the Altoona Mirror and Lauren Crispell, our sideline reporter on the Penn State Sports Network. And this half hour, we're going to talk about pro football with Neil Coulong from Behind the Steel Curtain. But the Friday Football Festival brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. All right, beverages. Wide array of beverages. Did I mention beer? What a selection. On top of that, snacks. A wide array of great snacks. Fresh, hot roasted peanuts, and of course, the pickle bar. Corey and the gang doing a great job at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. You've got that 50-inch window to the world that you want to watch college football on Saturday. We want to watch the NFL on Sunday. The World Series games 3, 4, and 5 coming up Saturday, Sunday, Monday at Busch Stadium in St. Louis. After the Cardinals won last night 4-2 at Fenway to tie the World Series at a game apiece. The NHL's going on right now. The NBA starts Tuesday. Derrick Rose and the Bulls against LeBron James and the Heat. So, I mean, it's a great time to be a sports fan, without a doubt. And you need to be fully stocked at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Chateau. It doesn't matter whether it's the big football Friday and our football festival, or Monday through Thursday. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. 14s are on the lots. They're spectacular. The sales staff's even better. All right. Let's get to it here on the Friday Football Festivals. We shift gears to the NFL, bring in Neil Coulong from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Neil, welcome. The Giants Monday night broke through, won their first game. They know if they go 8-1, they can get to 9-7. That is a long, hard road in the NFL. So they are in the absolute long shot category. The Steelers have won back-to-back games in a different division, even though the Bengals are playing pretty well. I know you're feeling more optimistic about where the Steelers are right now.
I don't think the Patriots are playing all that great of football. They've got them after that. And the table set for them. I mean, they set themselves behind a bit, but they're improving every game. And that's really, I think, the key thing for the Steelers right now is the fact they are getting better. And that's coming in, what seemed to be the most unlikely of spots, which is along their offensive line. I thought it played a very good game overall as a team. And you're seeing right now that the emergence of 2012 first-round draft pick David DeCastro. He played his best game as a pro. He was dominant against the Ravens, and that's a very good defensive front. And granted, Haloti Ngata wasn't in there the majority of the time. He didn't really square up against him a whole lot, but he played very well. And you're starting to see a team that's coming together top to bottom now. If they can try to get back to their turnover ways like they had against the Jets on the defensive side of the ball, they might have something here.
It's interesting. The offensive line is obviously the key part to it. I'll be frank with you. At this stage, I don't know about you. I didn't see that coming.
I absolutely didn't. To be honest with you, for the height of right tackle Marcus Gilbert's ability, I'm not sure that we haven't seen that already. I'm not sure how much better of a player he's going to get. The offense was probably better without him in there, with Guy Wimper playing right tackle, which not only was he, the bottom of the barrel on their depth chart heading into this season anyway, but he wasn't even a right tackle. And he played the position at a level, I think, that's been better than Gilbert has all year. And the odd thing to me is the same thing happened last season when Gilbert got hurt. I think he got hurt in week 6, but he didn't play in week 7. And you saw Mike Adams come in and do a very good job. I mean, I'm starting to wonder if Gilbert isn't the issue here overall. I mean, you'd have to kind of look at, the rules of subtraction and wonder if Gilbert himself, whatever it is that he's doing or not doing, is not causing problems throughout the whole offensive line. And the offensive line is a unit. It's not just about, individual skills. It's how well those guys are playing together. And I thought they looked more cohesive in this game than at any point they had this season. And this was the one game that, I think if we expected an epic collapse from the offensive line, it was going to be this one. You know, the Ravens are a very good run defense. They have a very active front seven, and the Steelers took it to them. I mean, it wasn't even I don't think it was even really a question that, you know, at times the Steelers were flat out dominating that team. And if the game would continue in the way that it was going to keep happening. So it wasn't expected top to bottom. And it's interesting to see if they have reached their ceiling, how much higher this group can get. If they can continue to play together the way that they have, how much better are they going to be? And that still, I think, is going to be the main question throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, when we talked last week, you were as optimistic as anybody I had talked to about them. Obviously, this game must have reinforced that optimism moving forward as to what they can accomplish in the next month.
From an offensive standpoint, I thought the offensive line was outstanding. They're still struggling to get the ball in the end zone. And now for the second week in a row, you had a receiver drop a touchdown that resulted in a drive that got 3 points instead of six. And things like that, I don't think they're quite there yet. They're not finishing drives. I mean, you know, four field goals from Sean Sweezum, call it three on regular drives. It helps, obviously, to put points on the board, but if they're not going to score, they're really going to get into problems. And they haven't scored touchdowns at a real high clip. And defensively, the negative thing I'd take away from that game is, again, I mean, if I could freeze time and dig into the statistics to find the answer to this, I probably would. But I'm really curious what the winning percentage is for a team that gets one sack and no takeaways in a game. And that's happened multiple times with the Steelers this season. The recurring theme here is if the defense can't make plays on the ball, they're going to continue to get that, you know, Joe Flacco 8-for-9 on the final drive type of, you know, game-ending scenarios. What happens if Emmanuel Sanders gets tackled at the 5-yard line when he takes the ball out from basically the back of the end zone? Are they going to be able to move the ball that far in that little amount of time? It's a question that, you know, kind of has to sit in the minds, I think, of Steelers fans watching this team going forward. Their offense needs to be a little bit more explosive, and they need to be a little bit more powerful to get touchdowns instead of field goals. And their defense needs to get to the ball. I mean, that last drive, I'm not speaking for every Steelers fan, but I know I saw a lot of them on Twitter that said the same thing that I did during the game. I really don't have any doubt in my mind right now that Joe Flacco is going to move this team down the field and score a touchdown. You know, there's a little that it seems to be, you know, that the old trademark of the Steelers, getting sacks, getting takeaways when they need them. They're just not getting them. They had one sack and no takeaways again. And if they can't find a way to make plays on the ball, they're going to get beat. You know, either they're going to see offensive teams, they're going to figure that out, and they're going to be able to get, pretty much uncontested passes down the field. And it won't result well if they can't, you know, find some type of way to get some pressure.
Look at Seattle. Seattle is a plus 14 giveaway takeaway. A plus 14. The Steelers, for 2 years now, Neil, have not been a game-changing defense. Oh, the stats look pretty, but they don't change the game in any way. How surprised are you? Is it just a pure function of age, or is there something else?
I'd say it's a combination, really, of two things. And right now, actually, it's probably more about 2.5 years. I mean, that this started in 2011. In some cases, and I don't know how scientific you can get with this, but you can make the argument that the NFL's mandate on player safety has diluted the Steelers' impact on defense. In 2010, it just a savage unit. I mean, they hit people hard. They had, you know, little regard for whatever fine or penalty they were going to get. Now it's like they're the most gentlemanly defense in the league. You know, they're not hitting guys after contact. In fact, they're not even really near the ball. And at the same time, though, that really is kind of the modus operandi of Dick LeBeau's defense. He's really trying to preach, you know, tackle the catch, not give up big plays down the field. Again, they've been great this season at preventing the big plays. Maybe not as good as some years in the past, but they're not surrendering big plays the last couple of weeks. but they're not making plays on the ball either. They really are tackling the catch. They're conceding it. You're not seeing Ryan Clark being the kind of force that he used to be, and that very well could be by design. You know, Ryan Clark was somebody that was very outspoken the last time he was fined. I think they tagged him for $40,000. Basically, his comments were indicating that if that's the way that we're going to have to play the game, then okay, we're going to have to play it that way. That's all fine and good, but when you're not making impact plays on the ball, like you mentioned, you've got a problem by design, and I'm not entirely sure the future of the Steelers defense it is, you know, schematically all that you'd think that it would be coming from Dick LeBeau. They really need to find players that are going to hit, that are going to get after ball carriers and force the ball from their hands. They're just not doing that. From an interception standpoint, you know, it's really kind of gone downhill. Not that Ike Taylor, who's one of the better cornerbacks of the last couple of years, not that he was ever really a turnover machine anyway, but they need to find guys that are going to make plays on the ball. And right now they don't seem to have them. And I'm not entirely sure that's going to change, but I'm not really surprised by it either. I was surprised in 2011. I was kind of surprised in 2012, but right now, it's par for the course, and it's a long way to look back to when this team was forcing, you know, more than two takeaways a game.
You mentioned David DeCastro in a previous answer. Obviously, last year's first-round pick, the 2012 first-round pick. How do you feel right now about what you've seen? And I know I brought up Le'Veon Bell to you a couple times, but like Jarvis Jones, for example, guys like that, some of the younger players that down the road should be impact players for this team.
Like I had said, DeCastro, I think, just played his best game as a pro, and he's certainly got a very high ceiling. He's a very good player, and it's his second year, but that was only his ninth game, I think, in the NFL.
Right.
It's really starting to click with him, and you know, a couple of the media accounts after that game is DeCastro. I mean, he's a very stoic guy. He's very non-emotional. He doesn't really like talking to the media. You know, pretty much a one answer or one word answer kind of guy. He was ecstatic after the win. I mean, he was, you know, searching out media guys to talk to. He was really excited. You can tell it. He feels a lot better as a player. He feels a lot more comfortable. I don't think Jarvis Jones, you know, to put it mildly, has quite found that yet. I see him on the outside. It honestly looks like somebody's kid brother is throwing himself at the shoulder pads of, you know, his much larger older brother who's got several years of experience on him. It doesn't look to me like Jones really has a standard pass rush move. He doesn't have a way to beat a tackle just on his own. And he's going out there just, you know, by sheer heart and grit trying to get past the guy, and the tackle's barely even moving, you know. Against the Jets with the Brickashaw Ferguson, I mean, I don't think he really made Ferguson even work very hard. Jones didn't have a way to get around him. He tried to go through him. And, you know, Jones, for as explosive as he is, he's not a real thick guy. So if you're talking about a straight, you know, head-on-head matchup with a tackle, he's not Lamar Woodley. He can't bowl guys over like that. So Jones has got a little ways to go yet. I don't know how much we're going to see from him this year. And I said that at the beginning of the season, too. I think he's going to be a good player, but he's got some work to do yet. He's not the finished product that people want to make him. And I think the reason he's starting is to get him experience to learn how to do those things. I don't know how much they could really count on him this season as a pass rusher. At the same time, you know, he's shown, at least in the preseason, that he's got, you know, some real explosive ability. I think he might even be better served just, you know, playing in sub packages, maybe coming after the quarterback in the A or the B gap, play on the inside a bit more. But they're going to keep him outside and see what he can do in the long run, I guess.
But who would tutor him? I mean, usually if somebody can take you under the wing and say, look, you know, in this league, this is how you do it, and is secure enough to do it, who might that be?
You really hope it's linebackers coach Keith Butler. I mean, he's the defensive coordinator waiting in the wings right now. He's had a great track record with a lot of other outside linebackers. And I think from a coaching standpoint, he's going to get what he needs. It's just a question now of repetition and, you know, making sure he's putting the work in. And by all accounts, he is. You know, he's a good kid. He works hard on the field. You can see it. It's just he's not quite the you know, the physical force that he was in college when he could just get away with that kind of stuff.
Sure.
If you saw the SEC championship game last year against Alabama, he was going up against their tackles who are NFL-level guys, and he wasn't just completely destroying them either. I mean, he went up against Florida, and I think they had a sophomore right tackle in that game that he just abused. You can see him, you know, dominating against, you know, lesser experienced, lesser, you know, strength-wise tackles, but he's not doing it at the NFL level. And a lot of that is, you know, weight room, film, and field. Get him out there, get him some work. We'll see where he is when he's, you know, 24, 25 years old. I mean, they all can't come in and be Von Miller. So, you know, hopefully it's a situation in which, you know, he can develop under Butler in the scheme that they have, and he can become an impact player like a lot of outside linebackers on that team have been.
Obviously, if you're in a tough position, it helps, obviously, having a Ben Roethlisberger. In the last couple of games, his ability to see the field, understand what's going on, and understand protections and so forth, what has that meant?
I think it's meant everything with that offense. He's played, I mean, obviously he hasn't turned the ball over, which is definitely a huge factor to have. But his decision-making, I think, has been outstanding. And a part of that, with, you know, all due credit going to the offensive line, you've got a quarterback that's making much better decisions with the ball. He's releasing it faster. He's seeing the field a lot better. He really seems to be back into the rhythm that he had the middle, you know, at this time last year when Haley's offense really seemed to click with him. And he was playing some great football early in the year. He just wasn't making as good of decisions, I think, as he is now. And the offense is able to maintain drives now because of it. And you're adding in a rushing element with Le'Veon Bell and, you know, an offensive line that seems, you know, inspired over the last couple of weeks. You're looking at an offense that really can do, I think, what Todd Haley has been wanting it to do. Control the ball, you know, take your shots down the field when you have them, but keep the defense off rhythm for the most part. You know, one thing I've always liked about watching Haley is he's a great strategist. He sets up what he's doing, you know, almost like a game in advance, and he comes up with new wrinkles, new variations of different things that he's been doing, and it seems to keep defenses off guard. You know, to whatever end, they'll use the wildcat package that they had that I don't think they've used outside of, you know, a direct snap here and there to Antonio Brown. I don't know how often they'll use that, but you can see why they did it. They wanted to get some speed out to the edge and, you know, not waste the time with the handoff. Just get it to Bell and let him go with it. It's one more thing to make a future opposing defensive coordinator think about. So he can come out with that package in another week or two and add another wrinkle to it that they're not going to be prepared for and keep going like that. That in mind, Roethlisberger is going to be able to benefit from it because it's getting harder and harder to game plan for him, and he's already a great spontaneous quarterback. So, you know, offensively, I think they've got a real strategic advantage over the next couple of weeks.
Neil, always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Neil Coulong, BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. All right. Friday Football Festival. Had a great time today. Yeah, we went all over the place. Now, we did start out with Brittany Griswack from Penn State Field Hockey, but they've been on a roll of late. You're talking about a team that hasn't lost in 47 days. They're playing Iowa today. And, of course, the fantasy football. I want to thank Mike McGregor from Fantasy Throwdown. Tremendous. I think for you fantasy players out there, he gave you a lot of great tips. And, of course, in the previous half hour, Corey Geiger from the Altoona Mirror and Lauren Crispell, our sideline reporter for the Penn State Sports Network. Yes, Jack Ham will be on the show here in a couple of weeks. I've already talked to Jack about that. He goes, oh, yeah, anytime you want. So we wind down here on the Friday Football Festival. Kevin and the coach, Dick Hort, Shikellamy and Shamokin coming up tonight, 7 o'clock right here on News Radio 1070. WKOK, of course, the Friday Football Festival, as we have every Friday, brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And, of course, I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Hope you enjoyed the show today. We had a lot of fun with it on the Friday Football Festival. And tonight, it's Shamokin and Shikellamy, 7 o'clock with Kevin and the coach, Dick Hort. Tomorrow,
Jack Ham, Lauren Crispo, Roger Corey, and I will be in Columbus. 6:30 the airtime tomorrow night. 8 o'clock the kickoff as the Nittany Lions take on Ohio State. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Can't wait to talk to you on Monday here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.